Hi, and welcome to Rolling Start. My name is Darren Johnson. Today, I'm joined by an amazing friend of mine, someone that I know really well. His name is Mike Masuku, and he works for an organization that I guess existed many years ago, but not in the form it is now. This organization is now grown to be the biggest technology company in the world. As a fashion icon, everyone carries their products, I would say, the majority of people. He works for a firm called Apple, and he has agreed to join us today to talk about his story, where he's come from, how we ended up at Apple, and all the things that happened in between. So thank you, Mikey. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Darren.
Let's get down to business. I really want to kind of talk to you, because knowing you and knowing where you're from. So you weren't born in the UK. You came over to the UK from abroad. So tell me how that all started, how you got here.
Sure. So I was born in Zimbabwe. At the time, it was called Rhodesia, which is a British colony in the south of Africa. And I was born in 1978. That allows you to kind of, you know, map my age for those of you that were curious. I vividly kind of remember Zimbabwe. It's fresh in my mind, and the house and the flat that I was born into, because my parents, who were young parents at the time, I've got to say, they were in their sort of, you know, late teens, early 20s when I was born, living in a flat in one of the inner city townships, as we call them, back in Harare, which is the capital of Zimbabwe. And it was kind of dense inner city township, low income township. And yeah, that's what I was born into. That was the sort of the initial conditions that I came to this earth on.
So a township like in South Africa, like you talk, because that's the township I know. Is that what you mean? So you mean poor, you mean difficult, not good conditions. It's just kind of paint the scene.
Yeah, it's what they call high density areas. So you can imagine houses next to each other, flats, blocks of flats, you know, super close to each other. It wasn't a shanty town like you would have in South Africa, but it's certainly sort of highly populated, dense areas. So you lived on top of each other, even though it's in houses. The blocks of flats had, 30, 40, 50 apartments in a very small, dense area. So, and I vividly remember that because there was always people around. There were always, up until we moved away from there, and I'll tell a little bit about that, there were always people around. And the reasons my parents lived there is because it was cheap. It was low cost for, two young people moving out of home together. And they'd moved from the outer high density areas, so the outer townships, towards the city.
Wow. So growing up there, so your frames of reference, so the people around you, like what were they doing? What are the kind of jobs in that area? Like what were the people doing? Because that must be quite interesting for you. Like how do you get inspired from that?
So I'll talk a bit about the jobs that were there. It was inner city, township. So people were close to the city, were living close to the city, so they could go into the city, into town, to find jobs and to work. And also the industrial areas were close to that area, so they were close to the city. And the reason that the proximity is important here, because it was low income, so people couldn't afford transport or cars. So they were living close enough to town to be able to walk to their jobs. And the types of jobs that they were kind of, factory workers primarily, because there was, big manufacturing industry in Zimbabwe, mainly around tobacco and agriculture, or people that worked in the market. So sort of the local economy, effectively. And it was a huge market. It was actually one of the biggest markets for the city. So other people from around the city used to come to the market. So if you imagine, the jobs that people were doing there were market traders or kind of factory workers. So it meant it was kind of low income. My parents could move there. They could afford to live there. But my dad was the first, and I think only a person in his family to have gone to university. So he had just graduated out of university. So he had an engineering job at one of the local tobacco companies, British American Tobacco. So actually, you know, whilst we lived in a low income area, he was still on a low income, but he had a relatively good job, which was kind of the kickstart that allowed us to be able to push out of that situation.
Wow. So you come to the UK. Why did you pick the UK?
So my parents managed to work their way through, you know, get us out the low density area. You know, my dad worked his way up in his company. And, you know, eventually, it may be about, I'll probably say it was about a 10-year journey. We ended up in a suburban house and, you know, in Harare still. And I was packed off to boarding school at some point during that 10-year journey. I think I was 8 when I went to boarding school. And during that period, my parents split up. My parents divorced during that period. I think it was probably, you know, partly the financial strain of sort of growing up and not being able to afford a lot. And eventually, although they may have worked their way up, I think at that point, the relationship was strained. So my mum decided to emigrate and come to the UK. And I was still at boarding school at this stage. My parents decided it would be better for me, for my own future, to move here with my mum in what was a better economy to the UK. So that was at this point in the early 90s. That was the point I migrated to the UK.
That must have been, I guess, quite brave of your mum. So your mum's a single mother now. She's come to the UK and then she's sent for you to the UK. Mm-hmm. And she's done that to give you a better life. You come to the UK. How old are you, approximately?
I'm 13.
So you go into the UK schooling system. How did that feel? Because I remember meeting you for the first time. Mm. And I've got to be honest, you look disheveled. You look like you weren't, you know, comfortable. You know, you weren't well dressed. It was difficult. You know, you could tell that you came from what I would imagine being difficult circumstances. And mm-hmm. you're coming into, mm-hmm. you know, quite a westernized culture. Mm-hmm. In a school where you know no one. How did that feel?
Got to say that was probably the toughest period, that settling in period. And I think everything you've described there is true. I walked into a school, I didn't know what to expect. I spoke English, which was probably the biggest advantage that I had as an immigrant. So it probably gave me, you know, the best platform I could have, but everything else was just different. Everything else was culturally shocking. And actually, I say I spoke English. Even the English that I thought I knew was very different to what the other kids in the playground were speaking. So communication was super difficult for me. I think when I joined St. Mary's in Croydon, I faced some intimidation, probably not intentionally, but just from kids who were curious. You know, when kids are curious, they're not always that welcoming. They kind of like point at you and sort of make you recognize the odd things about you. So that was really tough. There was one person at the time who helped me get through that. And that was, you know, that was you. And I don't want to sort of, you know, I don't want to make this about you because you're hosting the podcast and, you know, I don't want you to blow your own trumpet. But I remember you being one of the few people that was curious about, you know, where I'd come from, in a way that wasn't mockery, in a way that wasn't intimidation. And there weren't many of those people. I guess that's why we're kind of on this podcast today, because we're still friends, you know, nearly 30 years. How long is it now?
Early 90s. Long time.
Nearly 30 years on.
So can we keep the years down, please?
Sorry. Yeah, you're born in the 90s.
I'll give away my age on this podcast. But anyway, thank you for that. That was actually quite touching. But, you know, so you're at school now. You're trying to assimilate into the school system. You know, what's your aspirations now? So you're in the UK. Do you know what you're going to be? Did you see a vision of yourself working for a company like Apple? I know that's a difficult thing to say because Apple has evolved a lot over the years, but did you see yourself in technology? What were your frames of reference? What was your aspirations at school?
Thinking about Apple is grand. I didn't think about Apple at all. I didn't think about technology companies. I thought as far as probably, you know, the next day is as far as I thought at the time. And the reason for that was, you know, it was survival mode for me. I just had to get through the day. I just had to get through the day without, you know, without being the odd one out. I had to get through the day with the money that, you know, my mom had worked hard to give me for the day. I had to get through the day to be able to kind of, you know, get back and spend time with my mom in a one bedroom flat and sleeping, you know, in the front room because my mom, you know, was in the bedroom, rightly. And all I would think about when I got home was sort of, you know, the next day and how I was going to get through that. So I think when I reflect, probably my whole school life, I could only think about the next day. And it led to a lot of, I guess, challenges around my schooling. I was, you know, I always say to myself, I was a C-level student, but I didn't pass my GCSEs the first time. And I think, so that means I wasn't a C-level student, because if I was, I would have, but I was lower than that. And that's partly because I just didn't have the bandwidth to kind of, you know, have ambitions beyond getting through the next day. So it took a while for me to start thinking sort of beyond that. And that was tough.
So just digging in that a bit more, because clearly, you know, you said that not having that bandwidth and knowing that you need to succeed, because I know at one stage, or certainly when you were older, your mom had left you and, you know, you had to fend for yourself. And clearly you must have thought, like, how do I put myself in the best position to get out of this situation? So living day by day, was there not a driving force in you to change your circumstances, or did that kind of evolve over time? So I just want to dig again into that. Something must have helped you.
Yeah. And actually, good question. There were two things. And this is me thinking back. At the time, I probably was I didn't have the clarity that I have now. There were two things that I think sort of helped me keep going. The first was, I was lucky enough to have sort of seen in my first 10 years or first 12 years growing up in Zimbabwe, I was lucky enough to have seen my dad work his way up from a low income situation. And he wasn't, you know, he's not a millionaire today. He's not even middle class today. He's, you know, he's just average Joe who's been able to come out of a ghetto situation. And so I'd seen him work himself out. And the main crux of that, and he drilled this into me, was he credited the reason that he worked his way out was because he went to university. And actually not because he went to university, but because of education. The fact that he had educated himself and had been educated was the reason he was able to climb out of the hole. That was the first thing. And I'd been, you know, lucky to observe that in my first sort of 10, 12 years. The second thing, I was holding on to the coattails of my peers, the friend group that I had built around me, because, you know, I'd built allies around me who were people that I was emulating, right? I'm a kid, you know, straight in from Africa, doesn't know how to kind of live as a teenager in the UK, and is kind of figuring this out. What you do, or what I did in that situation, was just copy others. I'll mimicry. I'm just going to copy what other people do. And so I started to find people who I felt represented and a little bit of, you know, whatever I wanted to be, which was either, you know, someone that dresses well, or someone that speaks well, or someone that is sort of, you know, good in school and is actually respected by their teachers and respected by their peers. So I started to emulate people. And so my ambitions, you know, were, that's as far as they're stretched at this point now, which is like, what are the best peers around me doing? What are the people who are friends with me who are doing best? What are they doing? And some concrete examples. Jobs, right? There were people getting jobs when we were just getting to the tail end of our schooling. You know, McDonald's started recruiting people at a young age. So there were people getting jobs at McDonald's. You, Darren, were one of them. You got a job at McDonald's. I remember that. And I was like, I was like, wow, like, you can work and earn money, and you were sort of, you know, I'm trying to think what the mobile phone of the day was. It was in the 90s. You probably had something like pager, maybe. I don't know if pagers were around then. That's probably as cool as you would have been. But I was starting to see sort of you kind of, you know, have the ambitions and working and coming back and telling all these stories of being ambitious.
You get to 16 years old. Okay, so you finish schooling. Now, I know there's a point where your mom leaves you. And you're by yourself. You're still a very young man. You have to, you know, if I recall correctly, you were living in a bedsit. I didn't even, I didn't know the circumstances in which you were in or certainly appreciate that. And I'm sure maybe some of your friendship group didn't either. And, you know, all I know is that I never felt that you needed help. And I think that's really interesting. And the psychology of that. And I don't know if you can dig into or basically tell us about your mum leaving and how that impacted you.
Yeah.
And then how you went on, because I know you went to university, did very well, et cetera. So give us some context in that.
So my mum had to go back to Zimbabwe to sort out some things back at home. And it meant she had to go quite suddenly. And she was away for, you know, probably a couple of years. And I think it's, I'm 16 at this point. And I've just made my way out of school and I'm in college and I have to find somewhere to live. And I was lucky that one of our mutual friends, Kwabena, his uncle, had a room that he was letting out, a bedsit. So I jumped in on that. And I had to pay for this thing. I had to pay rent. It was a bedsit. It wasn't free accommodation. So I actually, before my mum left, she used to work at Tesco's and she managed to help me get an interview at Tesco's. So I got a job. I just started a job at this point and I was earning, you know, minimum wage, whatever it was at the time. And I was going to college and we'd sort of, you know, started college at the time and just finished our GCSEs. And so I was living on my own in this bedsit, working at Tesco's. And again, sort of I was back to that place where it was now about like survival and now about how do I see through tomorrow? How do I earn enough money to pay the rent of my bedsit? And I think actually my bedsit rent was weekly. Because I'd arranged to pay weekly because I was earning, you know, weekly income. My monthly income was sort of, you know, it was too far to stretch. It was too far to see a week. So I was paying weekly. So I was just living by the week. So spending a lot of time in a room with a bed, no TV. I don't know. I didn't have a TV. It gives you a lot of time to think, gives you a lot of time to reflect on your own situation. The things that I had to, you know, keep me beyond the four walls were work, as in sort of, you know, going to Tesco's to earn money, and going to college. So education, and having a job. And those are the things that I just kept grinding at. And then in the evening after work, I'd walk back. I bought a car during this time because I started doing math. I started doing math where the forcing function was I needed to make my money last until the end of the week. So I started to be sort of, you know, that's when I got introduced to budgeting, because, you know, people would ask me for money for things. And I'd realize that there were, you know, the demands for money were greater than the demands, the income that I was bringing in. So I had a budget. So I learned to budget. And I figured, and little things that I remember from that time is when I first learned to budget and I figured it was cheaper for me to buy a car, to be able to go to work and to go to college than it was for me to buy a bus pass and to use public transport. So it took me, I think, 3 months to save enough to buy a car. And that whole process is a story in itself, but, you know, paid a deposit at this garage and some of the spare time that I had in the evenings after I'd paid a deposit for this car, just go outside this this car dealer and just look at the car that I'd paid for, I'd paid a deposit for, and think about how close I was to buying it. And I'd go in, you know, every week to pay an extra £50, I think it was. So it took me about three months, maybe just under, to go from a deposit to paying off for the car. And all this time I was in the showroom and I just used to go outside and look at it every now and again to make sure it's still there and make sure my money hadn't gone away.
That's super powerful. Super powerful.
Yeah.
But it's just manifesting things. So you're at college now, okay? So you're going through all of this stuff. You're working jobs. You're trying to study. You're trying to eat, live. So then you did talk about education, and I was just wondering at this time, you know, at college, you clearly are not financially stable. Why did you go to university? Because university is an expense in itself, and you chose to go to university. Can you talk to me about that a little bit?
The same theme continues here, right? Which is I'm at college now. I'm not thinking about university at college. I am, again, just thinking about getting through this thing. I vividly remember kind of maybe three distinct things that pulled me towards university. One was a push. One was a class I was in and the teacher. And like I said, I wasn't a great student, but, you know, I thought I was better than what the teacher thought. And she said to me, like, are you thinking of going to university? And I thought, yeah, why not? Like, okay, yeah, I'm thinking of going to university. And she said to me, I'd probably recommend you don't, because I don't think you have the capability to go to university, or something to that term. And I remember thinking, what? Who are you to tell me, like, what capability I have? Or what I don't. But also I remember thinking at the time, maybe she's right, but maybe she's right that I can't go to university. So that was one thing. And she got me thinking about university, by the way. At this point, I wasn't thinking about it. And her prompting that question, I was like, okay, what's this university thing?
So someone has told you, effectively telling you you're not capable of doing something. There's different types of people in the world, like two types of people. Some people accept it and some people don't accept it. It sounds like you didn't accept it. And I just want to understand why you didn't accept it. Like, what was in your mind? Like, why did you think, well, you know, this person, why did you choose to not listen to that advice? Because if someone that's experienced has given you some advice, you know, most people just follow it.
Okay, I'm a poor student, but I still felt I was kind of, you know, good enough to be able to kind of, you know, work my way through college and do better. The second is just being challenged. It was just like, what position are you in to be able to know my circumstances, to know and make a decision for me right now that I can't do something in my future? And I'm living on my own, right? I'm living in a bed sit. I'm able to pay rent. I'm working. So at this point, I've managed to do all of these things, and they've kind of, it's a lot of things for me to be handling at that point, sort of being self-sustained and putting myself, you know, into college and being able to work and having a car. So I guess there's a confidence that I'd naturally built in me at that point. And I'm like, no way. There's no way you are telling me that I can't go to university. And look, you know, me and you took different paths. You didn't go to university, and, you know, not even arguably, you're doing, you know, a lot better in your career. I think that then gave me a blind focus on university. And that gave me a sort of a motivation to prove her wrong, that I can do this. And actually, you know, I'm doing more than you can see, which is, you know, I'm sustaining myself, and I'm able to put myself through college. Therefore, I can do university. So that was one component, and that was the one driver. And then we have a friend of ours who's older than us. He was kind of maybe 2-3 years older than us, Gerald. And he had I think he was in his final year of university. So he used to tell us a lot about, like, how amazing university was, just on the social side. And sort of, you know, he used to come back with stories about, like, all of these things he gets to do because he goes to university, all this time he has. So there was now there a pull factor, which was like, okay, like, if Gerald can do it and he's telling me about all these great things that he's able to do at university, and this, you know, my teacher thinks I can't do it, between those two things, one's pushing me and one's pulling me. And so that just, you know, build the escape velocity for me to kind of, you know, build the energy to go to university. So yeah, I ended up going to university.
Now, that's amazing. I think what I've just taken from what you've said is, and I've never thought about this actually, resilience breeds confidence. And I've never really thought about it, but you know, if you show resilience, you kind of have a confidence. So then when you graduated from university, Mm-hmm. You said that you went into marketing. So I know you've worked for some well-known companies. So tell me about your first job. How did that feel, given your background?
Yeah, so I moved back to Croydon and my mum had moved back at this point. So I was living with her. Again, I think, you know, we were still low income. I moved back. She was living in a one-bedroom small house at this point. So I was living with her again because obviously you come out of university, you got debts and so forth. My first job was, I got a job as a product manager. And I've got to be honest, at the time, I didn't know what a product manager was. I was just looking for any job and it was in South Croydon. Selling
cables. How did you get the job then? How did you get the job if you didn't know what it was? What did you say to me?
So I actually, yeah, CV. My mum had been working at this point. She'd worked her way up to a kind of, you know, a blue collar job. White collar job, and through agencies. So she used to send her CVs to agencies, and the agencies used to be like, "Hey, we got this kind of, you know, legal secretary job here. Would you like to kind of do it?" And she sort of done some really good white collar jobs. So she put me in touch with the agency. Like she facilitated, like, "Hey, my son's just finished university. Have you got any jobs that you're doing that, you know, that you might have that might be suitable?" So they presented this job to me, which was sort of, you know, product manager. When this one came back, which was product manager, I was like, "Yeah, I'll do it." So I went for the interview, and I wanted to be a marketing executive. Which is the job title I was actually looking for. So product manager was just like, okay, I'll just do that. I went for the interview and I got the job, and it empowered me a little bit, which was, one, I didn't know what the job was, right? So I turned up and, you know, got given instructions, and it was, you know, loosely marketing based, but it was more around kind of, you know, pricing products and being able to understand the market. So the market that we were selling the products in, but because I didn't know a lot about what they wanted me to do, I then learned the skill of learning quickly, right? Like a meta skill of like, how do I learn things quickly? I was asked to do, you know, 1,000 things because I was super junior. I was, you know, there were a couple of other people in the marketing department. And I just used to get tasks, and I would, you know, the internet was, I had a computer with the internet. I learned how to use that and find answers online. So yeah, that's how I learned quickly, but it was all, you know, fast learning and figuring things out on the job and realizing also that, you know, most people do that. People still do that today. You know, I do that in a lot of circumstances today, which is I go into things not really 100% understanding what I'm going into, but with an inkling that this is the right direction, and I just figure it out. And I, you know, I realize now, looking back, is that's what I was doing since, you know, I landed at St. Mary's. Just like, I'm here now, so I'll figure it out.
That is interesting, because it's easy to say figure it out, but if you're, you know, someone that's in a situation, you know, you've got your first job, somehow they gave you an opportunity. And you need something about you to take the opportunity. And it sounds as though you have thought about what's your edge. How can I shine and thrive? And luckily, it sounds like you having a friendship circle where you could share experiences really helped you. Mm. But I guess what else? Because, you know, some people read books. Some people, I don't know. Now we're very lucky we have the internet, YouTube. It's very mature. And people try and learn in different ways, but you go into a company, you're not sure what the role is. You talk to people, maybe they know, maybe they don't. You obviously have to be successful, I assume, because you want to move on to bigger and greater things. So I just wanted to just ask you, is there any kind of, I don't say magic trick, but you say, you know, you got to figure it out. And I'm like, well, how do you figure it out? Like, tell me how you figure it out.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I think books came to me later because I was a slow reader. So I never really got into books that until later in life. But one of the things that I then figured out, and this was the forcing function of kind of trying to get through growing up in Croydon, was you had to be able to speak to people. You had to be able to build relationships with people and get on the right side of people very quickly. If you wanted to kind of make your way through, at least make your way through Croydon. And So actually, I think one of the skills that I got to at that time to figure things out was being able to build relationships with my peers very quickly and with, you know, my bosses very quickly, and sort of speak to them about, like, how would you figure this out, and start to build the skill of asking questions. And, you know, I'm passionate about asking questions because, one, I feel like that's the quickest accelerant to knowing anything, right? I'm only passionate about it now because it's kind of something that I've had to be sort of doing throughout my career, which is ask questions about how did you get to where you are? Even if it's the person sat on the desk next to you, like, try and find his part. And I was trying to figure out, like, what's the one thing that that person does best that I can steal? And those were my books, right? Those were my books.
So, that's great. That's great. Advice there. That's great. I think it's very, very good and strong advice that people should ask questions, I guess. If you had an opportunity to talk to your younger self, right? Because it's been a journey. Mm-hmm. What would you say to yourself in order to, I don't know, maybe hack that journey? In other words, get to where you are faster. What would you say to yourself?
I think the thing I'd say to me is, whilst you are challenged and only able to focus on tomorrow in terms of survival, I think try and see beyond your immediate sort of, you know, line of vision, in the sense of think bigger is probably the kind of, you know, the heuristic I'd use, which is, I think if I find a combination of both surviving and thinking about tomorrow, and also realizing that there were a lot of opportunities that are beyond Croydon, in fact, that are, I could work for the TV station that I'm watching, or I could work for the company whose video game I'm playing, or I could work for a company that's in America. Like, all of those things were like non-existent for me. I never thought about that. And I think just that, thinking about, you know, what you could do, and that is beyond what you can see, and that is bigger than, you know, survival, is the first thing that I would sort of, you know, tell myself. Because I think what that does is it builds ambition at a younger age, right? It lets you know what's possible. And over time, you know, if you are curious enough, if you surround yourself with the right people, you can start to build a pathway towards those bigger things, rather than just trying to build a pathway for survival and you know, just to think about, you know, what your next day is going to look like. So I'd probably tell myself to kind of, like, hey, like, put your head up and look at what the world has to offer. Like, don't just think about sort of, you know, your peripheral vision. If I can make the decision that I want to work on the things I see every day around me, I want to work on games, I want to work on sort of, you know, TV, I want to work on the things I consume. What do I need to do next to be able to do that? And it got to me kind of walking into an agency, a marketing agency, had all of these brands on its books, a lot of these sort of consumer brands on its books. And I asked them if I could work for them for 2 weeks for free. And while I took holiday from the job that I had at the time, which was selling cables. And those 2 weeks unlocked me to start working on the launch of the Nintendo DS. With, you know, some people I still work with today, by the way, probably 15 years, you know, 20 years on. But because I had the vision and ambition to be like, actually, I can work on brands and consumer brands. And this is one way I could do it. I started to kind of build a path. And that led to me sort of starting to work for all of these brands and building relationships with people that helped me sort of, you know, find ways to apply and go into the different big companies. So I was certainly sell myself to look bigger and to think bigger than I was able to at the time.
Thank you. So I think what you said there was really invest in yourself. It was amazing. You talked about the 2 weeks that you went to work for free to get that experience you wanted. I guess have a focus is what you're saying, and make a decision and go for it, which is amazing advice. The one thing I forgot to, I neglected to ask you was, you know, you being at Apple, we've talked about it a lot. What do you actually do at Apple? Can you just answer that?
I work in our apps, on our app store team, working with developers of other applications. So, you know, if you look on your iPhone today or in your iPad or whatever Apple device you have, there are a lot of apps there. My job is to try and work with those people who make those apps to try and sort of improve them and make them better and for them to be successful. So yeah, broadly, I try and help the apps on your devices.
Wow, amazing. Look, it's been truly inspiring hearing about your story. I think there's a lot people can take. And thank you for being so transparent and really helping us get to the nuts and bolts of, you know, how you overcome, I guess, your circumstances, where you start. You don't need to be a victim of your own circumstances. You can actually change them. And it's amazing to see how far you've come. Who you've worked for, we didn't even get into that, but you've worked for some amazing companies, as I said, at a very high level. So really, I want to thank you for joining the Rolling Start podcast, and hope to see you soon. Thank you.